Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Okay, let's go. I think I want to change careers. I think I want to be a sports journalist.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you need a little expertise in your field,
Why more of that than in any other field?
Well,
all you have to do is know two words, okay?
What's that?
Alex and steroids.
You still have that news thing. The young students I have who are interested in sports journalism, they want to cover the games. They want to cover the stars and the fun. They don't want to cover Tiger Woods in trouble. Who am I? Everyone knows who I am. I get stopped on the street saying,
ahead,
I know
Rex.
Your voice.
Tell everybody who
this
she
is. The Media Project. Welcome to the first voice you heard was Dr. Alan Chartok.
Not unusual.
CEO of Northeast Public Radio. First, last, you wake up to it, you go to sleep to it, and it lulls you to sleep during the day if you're lucky.
Eat your heart out, Rex.
Rosemary Armeo, professor at the University of Albany in the journalism program there, longtime investigative journalist, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, the putative host of this program. Do you want to spell that word? P-U, it begins, Alan. You would like that.
Yes, just like the two trust.
Yeah. Anyway, we were just talking as the show was about to get underway about the fact that there are so many students at UAlbany, journalism students, who wish to be sports journalists.
Right.
Of course, there aren't enough jobs in sports journalism for them. So I guess they better get ready to be
lawyers and doctors and such.
Sports information directors at colleges and that kind of thing.
The second choice is music and entertainment. No one picks, like, I want to do hard news. I want to do anti-corruption reporting. I never get those kids.
Well, that's because they haven't been raised that way.
Yeah.
In other words, they haven't been raised on that.
I haven't turned them yet.
Yeah, but you will. But that's right. You know, it's so interesting, Rosemary, that you say that because there are now 1,000 environmental programs around the United States. Okay, I made that number up. Okay, but 1,000. Let's just say 1,000. Let's say there are a lot of them. Everybody wants to be a major in environmental justice and good works and all the rest of it and stop us from frying and ultraviolet rays and CO2.
Mm-hmm.
I say all of this to you for a reason, which is when they get out, as Rick said, where are the jobs?
Where are the jobs?
Well, I'll tell you where the jobs are. They're working for the corporations that these guys hate so much. That's the problem.
Yeah, and actually, there are jobs in sports journalism if you consider journalism to be working for the team. That is, the teams themselves hire bloggers. It is essentially a form of public relations that is more concealed than what you typically think PR being. But each of these teams, of course, has their own elaborate system of reporting on what the teams do.
That's true.
At quite great expense.
We have students working with some of the teams to learn that. I mean, basically, to be a journalist now, you have to be an entrepreneur. You've got to figure out where you can make money.
And you've got to make it interesting. For example, let me give you a for example.
Okay.
I love the Times Union, Rex's paper. I read it every day.
Here we go.
It's fabulous. Just fabulous.
But
it raises an ethical standard to me. It's one that I have struggled with many, many times. Here, my wife, Roselle, is an outstanding Holocaust scholar, and I've asked her 100 times to come on and talk about the Holocaust when we have a relevant story here on WMC, but she won't do it. Yeah. But yesterday, I read a wonderful piece on the front page of the Times Union, above the fold, about redheads. Redheads, yes.
Right. There's a group gathering in Troy. A very bright young man in the community named Duncan Crary, who's a graduate of Union College, has organized an association of redheads and so on.
Yes, yes. Well, what I loved about the thing is that there are very few experts on redheads in the world. And one of them happens to be Mrs. Rex Smith, Marion Smith.
My wife wrote the book on red hair. Right.
She did indeed. And it was an excellent book. And we talked to her about it right here on WMC. We can ask her because we don't run the Times Union. She was quoted at length in the piece.
She was quoted briefly at the piece, and she was identified with the name as being the wife of Times Union editor Rex Smith. I thought it was a little excessive, frankly, but, you know.
You did?
Yes.
Why?
Well, the fact is, my wife happens to be, you know, I suppose.
And there's no sense. I can see.
Do you want me to answer the question?
Yes, but I can see the curls coming around your mouth right now. And, you know, just take it easy here. We're just having a discussion.
Happens that my wife is the only person, really, who has written a definitive study of red hair. So if you're doing a story about red hair, she would be the right person to quote.
Without question.
So.
You're exactly
right. I think she's right. I think it was good that she was identified that way.
Sure,
because
doesn't
it
hurt.
Just transparency is always good. And I think that Roselle should be here talking about the Holocaust.
She won't
too.
Do it.
Well, I think you're denying, then if she is really the great expert on it, you're denying your listeners the opportunity to hear this great expert.
Well, I take
why
some exception to if she really is the great expert.
Oh, well, if she's not the great expert, then like
there's no reason.
Here we go.
The so-called great expert. There's no reason to get nasty.
I think we start a campaign. Get her on here and then we'll just
check
it out.
I think we should call. Okay, I think, in fact, in the fun drive, people should call up and say, I'm calling for
Alan's wife. Yeah.
Exactly.
And by the way, it happens with some regularity. People do call up because
why can't we hear from Roselle?
I just want you to know that the Clintons have the same problem.
Do they?
You know, the husband and the wife, you know, it's like such a conflict of interest. And modern day couples both are good and expert in their fields and both deserve recognition. You just have to acknowledge, you know, that she's there because she's an expert, not because I married her.
But we were talking about journalism jobs,
and there is
an interesting point there, Alan, which is that there is a new study out. The National Association of Colleges and Employers alleges that there's good news for communication majors, which is a good thing. They broadly describe communications majors as including journalism, advertising, public relations, and all that sort of thing. The starting salaries were up 4% on average over 2011 grads, and the average annual salary is $40,900, supposedly.
I wish you hadn't said that.
Can you believe that?
I'm going to have people lose.
And it isn't believable.
I wish you hadn't said that because there'll be young people from our newsroom knocking on my door any minute now.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
the study's been pulled apart by experts who just found lots of fault with it.
And it's very interesting because it shows you one of the concerns that journalists ought to have, which is how you report statistics.
Right.
You know,
it's a very good statistical story. And it shows, for example, that it's supposed to have been adjusted for inflation. It's not adjusted for inflation. If you adjust for inflation, the raise is only like 1%. And it only counts people who have full-time jobs, not freelancers or people trying to put it together.
And are we talking average here?
Yeah, an average, as opposed to median,
is very important.
Exactly.
And it also doesn't include anybody who is not working in journalism. You have a journalism degree, but you're working, you know, in the PR office down the street.
Yep. Or you started that way and now you're running Time Warner.
Okay, well, then you count
then
your salary when you're running Time
average.
Warner, not now. That's not a beginning journalism salary.
But I noticed that Rex, I think, said the word communications. Mm-hmm. We had a guy who worked in our department, yours and mine, at SUNY, Bob Sanders, who used to distinguish between the word communications and communication.
Exactly.
He used to say communication. If you were a professor of communication, that was an academic undertaking.
Oh.
So he wanted to make the stationery for the department say, the Department of Communication, the department without an S.
Oh, dear. Actually, you know, out at Syracuse University at the Newhouse School of Communications, they are very definitive about that S because they have multiple departments within that school.
Oh, that's interesting.
That bring people together. And this argument about academic organization of things always, of course, drives people crazy. So
you make such profound and important.
Why, thank you.
No,
but,
I mean, no, that really was a good point about Syracuse University. I say it only because, you know, I may have ticked you off earlier in the program and I want to say something else.
Not that it would make any difference in the outcome of the program or anything. By the way,
the one thing I'm worried about is the day you slam the door and say, I'm done.
I'm out of here. That's it. I'm up. Gone. It'll be a great moment. You know, it'll be really exciting radio.
Well, to bring it back to our numbers, there used to be
a book. We used it as a textbook when I was a young journalism student called How to Lie with Statistics. The theory being that we had to learn how statistics are misused in order to learn as a journalist how to use them appropriately.
So the point of this is that if you get a job in journalism, the salary still sucks.
What do you think? $40,000 a year to start is not.
That's not a real number, Alan. That was the whole point of it. Yeah. This is not a real number.
What do you think? $30,000 a bad salary?
Yes, if you have a wife, if you have kids, if you want to eat a lot or even a little bit out in the world rather than ramen noodles. Yeah,
that was so sexist what you just said. If you had a wife, what if you had a husband you had to support?
I did for many years.
It was a good thing. Those were the days.
Hello.
Any case, the problem is that you can't make a great living in journalism. I was just having a conversation with one of our senior editors about this yesterday concerning one of our colleagues, a reporter on our staff, who's likely to be taking a job in public relations just because the difference in pay.
We call that going over to the dark side.
Well, it's true. Although
the hours are regular, the work is clean indoor work, and there's a better paycheck.
But at the bottom of it, you have to sort of tow the company line.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, you're selling, not writing. Mm.
True, but I would like to say on behalf of PR people that, reporters rely on them a lot more than reporters like to admit.
The same way that legislators rely upon lobbyists. This is bad. There's so much more going on in public relations than in journalism. We need more journalists. We don't need more spokesmen for state agencies and businesses. Let the heads of those businesses and agencies talk to journalists and cut out the middlemen.
Well, it is interesting. I'm sorry.
Really good point. I agree with that. I think that's really good. But I do think that there are people who are trying to make an honest living. You know, I don't really want to say that all people engaged in public relations are bad people.
I agree with you. They're not all bad. Well, it's just that they're doing bad things.
Okay. I'm siding with Alan on this one. It's not a good field. It's not good for our democracy that we have them. And Ron Kermani, for example, should be working at the Times Union, not for the state government.
Well, he was a good reporter.
He was, and he's a great PR guy, too.
Yeah. You can write directly to Rex and Rex and Rosemary right here at media@wmz.org. And we'll make sure they get your complaints.
Oh, boy.
Dear.
So, Alan, you're about to do a fun drive on Northeast Public Radio here, and I think you ought to mimic what's going on at WBEZ, the Chicago Public Radio
station.
It's
very funny.
Very clever. What they're trying to do is encourage, they're trying to get a little bit of attention by being sexy.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
So they say, we want listeners tomorrow, go make babies today. That's right. Do it for Chicago. Interesting people make interesting people. So it's an interesting notion.
Well, here's the problem. To be unusually serious about this, we do know the numbers in public radio keep going up. Age numbers keep going up. So here is an idea which has been used in many societies around the world, by the way, encouraging people to have babies so that they have enough people, to take care of. We have Social Security, which is supported by younger people for older people. Mm-hmm. So you could go look it up, but there are plenty of societies that say have more babies and we'll give you a medal if you have.
Well, there's a story in the Times Union this morning about this very thing. Yeah.
What's that?
The population is decreasing in the Western world while it's exploding still in developing, what we used to, can we still say developing countries, whatever we call the third world these days?
Which is now seen as a bad thing. It's so interesting
For the same reason you're saying, remember in the old days,
I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry. You can't support the aging population if you don't keep having more young people.
And remember when Rex and his group, a very outstanding centrist type, gray-haired, dimpled people in life.
Rex and his group. I couldn't figure what you were talking about. Which group of Rex's people?
They used to always be advancing zero population growth, ZPG. Mm-hmm. And now we have it. And we don't like it.
Uh-huh.
And Rex is always telling us that it is the job of the media, quite correctly, to be citizen journalists and to explain the implications of this stuff. But I think somehow when all of this stuff was coming out, we missed the boat.
Well, if you're talking about public policy, we should have had thoughtful immigration policies for a long time if you want to encourage growth. Indeed. So that the growth would be in economically advanced societies like ours rather than the growth being in places where there aren't the natural resources to sustain the populations.
But I thought you were going to say something else, which is really true. The way we're sustaining it is we're now taking 12 million people. And we are saying, and I think this is where journalists should explain what's going on.
Really?
And that is, it may look serendipitous that the 12 million undocumented people showed up, but in fact, they are taking the place, in many ways, of the young people who are being supposedly not being born in this country, because those are the people who are going to be doing all the supporting.
I would like to point out that the media has been writing about this for about 2 years now, at least. The Economist had a front page cover on it last
year. Oh, The Economist. So good. Everybody's running down to the corner and getting that now.
What? Your audience might be.
Yes, our audience will.
And just because you don't read those boring stories, Alan, about demographics and population trends, we publish them, but they're not quite as titillating as some of the stuff.
Interesting word. Why is Rosemary giving me this evil eye now? I don't get it.
Well,
because we're veering into the sexist again, so I have to just watch you, Alan. You know,
you never can tell. But the point being the problem being, of course, that there aren't enough young people paying attention to serious news media of any sort, whether it's correct. WBEZ Chicago, WAMC Albany, or the Times Union. We need to be figuring out a way to reach a younger demographic.
Absolutely.
I did my annual terrifying quiz on the opening day of an international reporting class, and I asked them where Mali was and where Algeria was. Most did not know.
Oh, mm-hmm. Come on. Ask them where the Pacific Ocean is.
I asked what Al Jazeera was, and my favorite answer was, oh, yeah, Kareem Al Jazeera. Played for the Lakers in the 80s and 90s.
Excellent. Now, point being, actually, I saw that you posted it on Facebook, and you know, you can reach young people with social media, and this has got to be where we make our play. This is why we need to be in social media, and it isn't necessarily the case that people will gravitate to everything they see there, but my daughter, who is 17 years old.
No, she is not 17 years old.
She is indeed.
We have her picture on our wall up here in a place of honor with Rex.
Yes, she does deserve that.
17 years old.
And she's very bright, and she, much to my surprise, she actually knows what's going on in the world.
Oh,
and
wow.
She absorbs it via social media.
Well, look who her parents are also. I mean, you know, it's not as if you guys don't count.
Well, yeah, but I haven't gotten her on a diet of the Times Union yet. You know, this is...
But you're talking around the dinner table, you and the redheaded author.
Yes, yes, there is some of that. Hey, when there is a... talk a little bit, would you, Alan, about your standards for underwriting here. Do you have any sorts of underwriters that... Do you have regulation of what programming underwriting
yes.
can be on or what you can't do?
Well, we have certain things we won't do. I mean, I can tell you right now that we will not take any hard liquor ads. We certainly won't take any tobacco ads or any of that stuff. In a couple of cases, we've had the board vote on this, but I do know there was a major Supreme Court case involving a St. Louis station where the KKK wanted to underwrite. And they said no. It went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, nope, just because they take public funds doesn't mean they have to take anything
anybody's.
They get.
So
you obviously had a point to make.
Well, the point was actually PBS has this wonderful program called Nova. They had a show called Rise of the Drones, and it was sponsored by, you know, that's kind of the term that we can use these days, by Lockheed Martin, which is a manufacturer of drones. And apparently that violates PBS's underwriting guidelines.
Well, apparently it's just a stupid thing to do, and I'm ashamed of them for having done it, because they bring a bad name to all of us here at public radio and public broadcast.
But, you know, the interesting thing is it is a tighter standard here in public broadcasting than, say, in the commercial media that I work for, because while we have certain standards in advertising that I'm not quite going to be able to cite them, but generally the assumption is that advertising is different from news, and while you may have an ad there for something that a person may find distasteful, it nevertheless doesn't interfere with the news presentation. So we don't have much of a delineation there.
Well, you know, there's several levels which can be very confusing. So we play at least one nationally syndicated program. We don't choose their underwriting. They choose their own, which used Monsanto, which is anathema to many of the, you know, people who listen to public radio. And I got all of these calls saying, how dare you do this? So I think if it's a PBS national show, that would be different than your local station, which is doing it.
Explain to me what the thought process is. Monsanto is
genetically modified crops.
All right. But that is not illegal.
No.
So you're saying that something that does not match the political bent of your board is something that you wouldn't underwrite?
No, not of the board, of our listenership.
Okay. So your listeners are dictating what kinds of underwriters you'll accept.
No, they're not dictating, and I'll tell you why. Because we didn't kick that nationally syndicated show off the air. I've made the point I don't like it. I've said I don't like it.
Why is that?
Well, because I happen to think that our listeners are very good and very bright and smart and insightful listeners understand that genetically modified crops and the way that the laws are developing around them, so that, for example, if you have a farm and you're not using genetically modified crops and, you know, the seed goes across and cross-fertilizes with your corn, you're not allowed to sell the corn, as I understand it. Right. That's a bad thing, Rex.
Well, it may be true. It sounds to me like you're right. But the fact is, unless it's barred by the Congress, why should that business be denied the equal opportunity to have its voice heard on a publicly supported radio station?
Or to build drone airplanes.
Well,
that's not illegal either.
Exactly. Right.
Mm-hmm. The government is, alcohol, as a matter of fact, is a legal substance in this country. Why can't an alcohol distiller underwrite programming on WABC?
Well, because I think that the board of the station has a right to say this is not something that we want to be putting out there. I think that's true. I mean, then don't
isn't it pretty practical?
Wait, Rosemary.
Okay,
punch to his solar plexus. don't you think, Rex, that freedom of speech works both ways? That a radio station has freedom of speech too?
You mean the freedom to say we don't accept underwriting?
Yeah, from somebody.
Do you make any modification of that in exchange for accepting taxpayer dollars?
Mm-hmm. Well, the percentage of our money that we get here is so small from taxpayer dollars that I would hate, and I would tell you right now, if that kind of thing attached to it, requirement, I would say no to the public money.
So
that's a lot of money. I mean, it's 10% of our $6 million budget, but it's something you'd have to give up.
And you're not saying, I'm sure, that you wouldn't allow a spokesman for Monsanto to come onto your program.
On the contrary, we would.
Yes, absolutely.
Many times I had those kinds of people here.
Alcohol, gun manufacturers, those kinds of
absolutely.
Folks you can have
in the news.
Yeah, in the news.
Sure.
But you just wouldn't take their money as underwriters. All right.
Isn't there a practical thing there beyond all the freedom of speech, you know, puffery? If the point of an ad is to get patrons to the product, mm-hmm. and you're playing it to an audience that's unsympathetic, aren't they going to tend to shut off your program and not help the sponsor and not help your program?
Could be.
So, I mean, isn't there a practical reason to want to match your sponsorship mm-hmm. with the inclinations of your audience?
Could be.
We had an interesting free speech
Meanwhile,
conversation.
Meanwhile, just call the UAlbany Development Association, Monsanto, Lockheed Martin. We'll listen to all of you.
Let the money come rolling into the public universities. We had an interesting discussion with the governor of New York this
I
week.
I saw the picture of him sitting around with all of you guys.
He came into an editorial board meeting, and one of the conversation points really was about his signing of an element of the gun control law that just passed the New York State Legislature,
sure.
which took off limits, which imposed a new freedom of information law restriction.
Terrible.
That doesn't
really,
no longer allow us
yeah.
to have gun permit information. And the point really
Terrible.
Was that we made to him, what's the next step? If you start pulling things out of public documents saying you can't let the public see them, the next time the newspaper does something else unpopular, you're going to say, no, we're going to make that illegal too.
So what did he say?
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear.
Well, it was actually a very practical answer.
We had a compromise.
I had to do that in order to get a certain number of votes. And we said, which votes are you not going to get? Well, I'm not going to say definitively who. But it was necessary to have
each
of the elements.
Well, Alan, you pointed out that he didn't seem to need to do that.
He doesn't need anything. He's got the assembly. He owns the assembly. They're all Democrats. And the Senate is there just because he lets them be there. I mean, I'll tell you right now, those Republicans would not be in the Senate unless Andrew Cuomo had not...
Would not be in control of the Senate, you're saying.
That's right. They would not be in control of the Senate because he said he was going to veto that self-serving reapportionment bill. He didn't do it. The day he didn't do it, the Senate became Republican.
Wow.
So they owe him everything is my point.
And that was the point that we wanted to make, too. And we said, you know, you could have gotten that bill. He said, I could not have gotten that bill without making the compromises we made. I'm hoping there will be a chapter amendment that, as we discussed in this program, that's what it's called in New York State when they change the law, basically.
Fix the law.
That this thing that they just passed, they will fix, and we won't have this restriction on public access to information they ought to have.
Well, you know, the governor's favorite quote, the one he uses a lot, it is what it is.
Finally, in our brief last moment here, there is a reality show, and NBC is a casting call for a small town newspaper to have a reality TV show about newspaper life.
I
How
like it.
That?
I like
love it.
It.
You can get people who will come and think of the drama.
Is it you?
We're not small enough, I'm afraid, but the drama of a copy editor inserting commas where a reporter doesn't want it.
Or the headlines.
Oh, the headlines, the typos. Oh, my God. People will go crazy. The byline
fights. Nobody in the slot. Something I learned on this program.
The slot.
The slot is where the copy editor sits.
Absolutely. The slot. You never can tell. And the starter. The starter is the last story before you start the press. Anyway, so you'll learn a lot from this program, folks. And we hope you come back and join us next week on The Media Project.
If I've said anything to offend you, Rex, I'd take it back.
Right.
Lots of other fakes. I've even met a genius who swallows rattlesnakes. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ling-a-ling, ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union.